Welcome to System Mastery, the podcast where we beat a dead horse 1d6 damage at a time. This week, it's time to talk about the forces. The mystic forces. Folks, let me show you the forces.
Ha-cha!
On System Mastery. Hello, and we start by referencing the Storybots show on Netflix.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, that's that doesn't immediately brand us as two people that live with toddlers, does it?
The forces.
That's going to be good for maybe...
a couple of parents out there.
Yeah, of all of our listeners, a few parents will be like, holy shit, they're referencing Storybots, and it's not just that rap about the planets.
It's that one episode where they have to learn how an airplane flies.
What up? I'm the sun.
So hot.
Made of hydrogen and helium. Oh, man. Mercury, smallest planet, small as Earth's moon.
It's my time to shine.
Oh, man. I can't give Sage the Storybots Netflix show because she's scared of big size perspectives. So because the Storybots like live in a computer, when they come out, they're like an inch tall. And so they're always meeting like... You know, giant celebrities. So they'll be like, hi, we're the Storybots. Mara Wilson, you can explain math to us. And Sage is like, turn this off immediately. Matilda's 35 feet tall. I'm scared. So I don't even know if there's a Mara Wilson one. That was just the first celebrity that popped to mind.
That's a weird pick for the first celebrity to pop to mind.
I follow her on Twitter. She's awesome.
Oh, I'm not saying it's a bad pick. It's a weird pick.
Okay, that's very fair. She seems like the sort of celebrity who's at the right range to show up on something like Storybots.
No way. You get like a bunch of
I know, they get some big
SNL
names.
People mostly.
Yeah. Bill Hader. Hey Bill Hader, can you in a word describe the opposite of ordered effects?
Chaos.
Boop. Anyway, we're going to be talking about mystic forces today. I'm Jeff. That's John.
Yeah.
Hey, everybody.
Hey, we're System Mastery.
Welcome to System Mastery. We find old role-playing games, and we read them, and we talk about them.
Yeah, now this is one that has been like a month and a half in the making because I had originally selected this book to do a while ago, but then I realized right before, like a few days before we were going to do it, I was like, oh shit, it's October. We need to do spooky things.
Yeah, so we
so
did
we
zombies.
Just put it off for a month.
Yeah, we did Zombieween. So we both read it, and then I, in my standard way, completely forgot literally everything.
Oh, this book.
Hell, I'm forgetting it now. Like,
oh,
as,
yeah.
In my mind, it's I can see it running away.
Nothing in this book sticks. I've read this book twice,
uh-huh.
And then made a character and like reread more of it,
mm-hmm.
And I'm like, nothing. This
no.
is nothing.
I can kind of get some Eternal Sunshine graphics inside my head right now to describe the feeling of having recently read this book.
Mystic Forces has Teflon words. They are sliding off my brain.
So what we have here is, I don't really want to say it's a heartbreaker, because I don't think it is.
No.
It doesn't attempt to emulate D&D. It feels like if it was attempting to emulate anything, it's... And this is only in a very oblique way, and I've forgotten the name of it, but that religious game about dragon people, warriors or whatever that we did a while back, the one that's...
Yeah, the one that was like, your pastor wants you to play an RPG that isn't satanic.
Yes, exactly. And then that's only because of some similar words, a very strong sense of good v evil being a big part of it, and like... How the entire game is about defeating evil and there's no gray area or anything. You play a hero and you fight bad guys. And also the kind of intro. The intro starts with a whole kind of defense of role-playing games and is like, hey, I know there's a lot of word going down about how games like this are bad news, man.
You might have heard some things on the street about RPGs.
Yeah.
But I'm here to tell you about the original game master, God.
Spins chair, spins hat.
Spin city.
It seems that a large portion of the general population has serious misunderstandings as to just what role-playing and role-playing games are, and most of these misunderstandings are in the line of thinking that role-playing games are evil or are a type of brainwashing.
That's right. So many people think RPGs are a type of brainwashing.
They are no more negative or harmful than any other type of card or board game, and in many respects are no different than any other type of entertainment media. Why, to say that all role-playing games are constructive and have no indecent inappropriate material would be as untrue as saying that there are no movies with indecent or inappropriate contents. Certainly, there are more role-playing games on the market that have some pretty harsh or indecent content. Ooh, hey. Bad. But there are many out there that are very clean and respectable.
And respectful.
And so well-spoken.
They'll say hi to your mom.
Like many things in life, you simply must be careful with what you buy to entertain yourself.
That's right.
And this is from around 2000, if that's what you're looking.
I was looking at it because I was like, I remember this being late for needing to do that. Like, if you put an RPG out and it was 1990, sure, maybe you would put that
in there. Right, because the Satanic Panic was coming to a close toward as the 80s did.
Yeah.
So to see that kind of like, there's a lot of word going around.
Hey, some people might think that RPGs are the work of the devil. I'm like, no one has thought that for at least a decade. What are you talking
about? Yeah, this is 2000. This is already the point where RPGs are starting to enter the mainstream and become a little bit cool.
Oh, yeah.
It's not all the way yet, but it's getting there.
I mean, you're about to get, or probably have gotten, I don't know exactly the date when 3X came out. But, you know.
2000. Yeah.
Yeah.
3X
I'm
is
like,
2000 to 2008 was the year.
I just don't know if it was before or after this. But I'm like, this is about the time when you are going to start really seeing a big turn for RPGs. But even then, you still had, this was after the establishment of White Wolf Games. This was after you already had Rifts. D&D was big still.
This was like 17 years after the Dungeons & Dragons cartoon show for kids.
Yeah.
It's the idea that they'd hit the point where they had to like prove them to be like, hey, guys, everyone look out. This isn't Satan talk we're about to do.
Oh, yeah. And so much of this book feels like someone made this in 89 and then stumbled on it and published it in 2000 because the art,
the art's very singular.
Oh, my God. The art in this...
It's adorable.
...is... just somebody's cousin is like, I can do art. And you're like, oh, sure you can, buddy.
I mean, I got to imagine that somebody's cousin was told that they were going to be drawing a bunch of like warriors and wizards and stuff for some kind of game. And then when they were presented with what you can play as in this game, they were like, oh, fuck you. I don't want to draw any of that. Because one of the neat things, I mean, the art, to simplify, is very childish.
I mean, this is... Gygax level art,
a little
the old school D&D where it's like, this is someone's motherfucking scribbles.
Yeah, it's very scribble. It's very first draft, basically.
Yeah,
they're like, we need a drawing of a thing. Here it is, done. No notes. I will take no notes.
Look, I'm not inking this motherfucker. I'm not putting any more effort than penciling down a Robert Zadar looking wart motherfucker, and that's it.
Yeah, but one of the things, like I was saying, I think he must have been surprised to learn that there are no humans. There are no elves, there are no dwarves. One thing you can say for this game is that it's got an original setting TM.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting that there's so much about the setting in this that is so generic while coupled with the desire to not be the same as everything else.
Yes.
Because the standard idea of like, oh, this is a... world where light and dark are fighting constantly, and the dark was winning so that the light made champions. You're like, this is the most fucking no creativity, shave off the serial numbers
Once
type of thing.
Once upon a time, there were bad guys, and good guys arose amongst the bad guys and were good. And then, as the good guys started to win, some of the good guys were bad guys?
Yeah, it's just the most... like, there was bad, and then good came, and then bad got worse, and good got better, and then it got real neutral, but now you're good again.
Yeah, it's a pretty straightforward setting. It's very much one of those, like, really morality enforced by the world type. There's stuff here that I like, I'll say.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to say I like this game. It's not a good rule set.
No.
But... There's stuff in the story that I think is imaginative in sort of a, oh, that's cute, I want to put that on the fridge kind of way. Which I know that sounds ultra-patronizing, and that's intentional.
No, but yeah. It really does feel like this is someone's first attempt at writing a fantasy setting, because they're like, all right, I'm going into this going like, well, I'm not going to do Tolkien, because everyone else has done that. I'm original. But you're still like 14, so you're like, there were bad guys. And you're like, oh, well, you don't have much of a good idea, but... At least you were like, I don't have dwarves. I've got people that look like dwarves, but they don't act like them.
Yeah. I feel like also you're 14 and the most advanced book you've ever been allowed to read is the Bible, followed shortly thereafter by, I don't know, the Chronicles of Narnia.
Followed shortly thereafter by the Chronicles of Riddick.
And the Chronicles of Prydain. And
that's all you've read.
Just Chronicles.
Look, all I got in me are Chronicles.
And
okay?
The only movie you've ever seen is Chronicle.
And of course, the only album you own is The Chronic.
but anyway, it feels like it's some, yeah, like 14-year-old kid just coming home from Bible camp wrote this, is what it feels like. I'm sure that's not the case.
Oh, of course not.
Yeah, I'm sure it's not an Aragon situation we're looking at here. This is grown adult and a lot of his friends and coworkers working hard to make a game. But the end result between the... colored pencil looking art and the very basic good versus evil on a fantasy world that never was structure, it feels very beginner.
Yes. Honestly, I mean, just because it's in my mind right now because of the show and everything, this really feels like someone read Wheel of Time.
Oh.
Because it's very much the dark versus the light,
mm-hmm.
and the magic system, the titular mystic forces are... the elements plus spirit, which is the magic system in Wheel of Time.
Okay.
And, you know, you have different levels of how good with any of them you are. It definitely feels like that. And they went, oh, but the only thing that really exists in Wheel of Time is humans and then some monsters. So fuck it. I'll make a whole bunch of weird things.
Right. I am extremely unfamiliar with Wheel of Time because I tried to read it once. I got like 30 pages in and I was like, nope, I do not want to read about mutton anymore.
Yeah, and no, you had the same response to Wheel of Time that most people do to Lord of the Rings. nope, fuck the hobbits, I don't give a shit. Anyway, I'm done.
Concerning Hobbits is the best chapter in the Lord of the Rings. I don't understand why. But I don't know. I have a super low mutton tolerance. I think that's literally a thing. I can get through maybe two mentions of specifically mutton, and then I'm like, nope, too Ren Faire, I'm out.
I mean, I'll give it to you. The first couple chapters of the first Wheel of Time book is very Ren Faire. Like, that is a very fair criticism.
I don't really, generally speaking, like most fantasy book series.
Well, you're a sci-fi gentleman.
I am more of a sci-fi guy, and a fry guy.
And a shy guy.
And a try guy. pending. I've sent in my application like 300 times. I don't know. I've told them, hey, try guys, how about a try guys letting a new guy on the squad to have some fucking money? And they're like, that's a great try, but no.
No, we're not going to try that.
Plus, we already got a gay one.
Sorry.
Yeah.
But do you have a fat one?
We're working on it.
Do you have one that shouldn't be in front of a camera?
Face for radio, please. Anyway, I don't know if the Aes Sedai, which is one of the terms I know because I have a friend who like was a sheriff on a Wheel of Time mush for 30 years.
Lol.
I don't know if the Aes Sedai have secret bad ones.
Yes.
Okay, well, yeah, then this is very Wheel of Time.
Yeah, no, there's... it very much feels like someone got influenced by that mm-hmm. and then tried to make their own setting for it. But the actual setting in this... also feels very tacked on.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the races and the powers and everything is sort of what they were going for, because there's, like, four pages that tell you what the background is, and it's just like, there was evil, then there was good, and then there was more evil, then there was more good, and now it's, like, 200 years later, and now evil is coming back, and you're one of the good ones.
Yeah. There's, there's a lot of stuff here in the setting that's interesting. Like, he basically just does, the author basically does everything he can to make you aware that this isn't Earth. So first of all, the planet doesn't orbit. It just sits there. It's hanging in space
just
in the firmament.
Hanging brain.
The sun, and it's not geocentric either. Instead, the sun is stationary above one spot on the planet.
Yep.
And so, and then it just kind of turns on and off. The sun just kind of goes in and out, like
it just instead of it being the reason it gets darker is the sun moving away and going onto the other side of the planet. It's like, oh no, the light actually just fades away.
Yeah, Helios is up there in his chariot just fiddling with the dimmer switch.
Yeah.
That's it. That's the chronology, the god chronology of this world. But they do say that, like, yeah, because the sun is parked over one spot, that spot's an inhospitable desert populated only by the kind of animals and monsters that would live in an inhospitable desert. And on the other end of the planet, because the sun gets over there, but not like a lot of the heat from it or anything, it's an intolerable ice land.
Yeah, Gratz, you live on flat Earth theory.
Yeah, pretty much. Or some mini star. You live on tidally locked planet is basically the end result. Like, that's where the Twi'leks live in Star Wars, is one of those planets. It's like where the hot side's hot and the cool side's cool.
Ah, yes, the planet DLT.
Yes, exactly. waste of styrofoam, those Twi'leks.
No way.
But that's kind of a neat idea for the chronology, that the planet's just hovering and that things don't change in the sky. The stars always look the same. There's no mention of a moon or anything like that, so I couldn't give any more than that. Also, the whole story about how hundreds of years ago evil rose and so on is completely original. There are five races. I don't particularly like that they are colloquially or collectively referred to as the ruling races. That seems troublesome.
I mean, the name seems troublesome, but then you're like, oh, there aren't any other sentient races, though. It's not like we're the ruling races and then there are our slaves.
Well, there are lesser intelligent races. Some of them, there's at least one in the monster manual, the Wolfrids or Wolfin or whatever, which are like wolf guys that are intelligent, and they're just not a ruling race. It's just okay to do whatever to them, and they don't get...
I mean, for the most part, the game is like, either you're one of the good races, or you're one of the evil ones.
Yeah, the Shadowkin, the bad guy races that kind of burble up out of the ground and are automatically evil.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, ruling race to me is one of those things where...
No, the
you hear
term
it, you're
is
like,
bad.
You're like, ooh. That's kind of like when you and I were at that meadery the other day.
Ah.
Excellent meadery, lovely people running it, called the Lost Cause Meadery. Red flags.
See, only for you.
Nope. Half the listeners immediately recoiled when I said that just
nope,
now.
Not even close. I'm going to say 99% were like, what, it's a lost cause. That's just a term for something.
Yes, it is a term for something. Perfectly not fine meadery. Excellent mead.
Yeah, it's not like... Lost Cause has not become synonymous with that in the same way that saying, like, the swastika meadery would be bad.
Okay, that would be significantly worse. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is ruling races to me is roughly the same level, where my mind sends up a flag real quick, and then I go, yeah, all right, okay, I guess it's fine.
Hold on, let me take a look at this.
Yeah, like if I see a white lady on her cell phone staring at a black family doing anything in public. My brain immediately sends up a red flag. I'm like, oh, is she up to some shit? And then, you know, when she keeps walking, I'm like, okay, everything's all right.
Oh, good.
Yeah, okay.
They were roommates.
It's just one of those flags. Ruling races squeaks me immediately. Now, the five races, like I mentioned, none of them are human. There are they are the Breitling,
yeah,
the Grack, the Loremech, or Lormech.
The Lormech, I think.
The... Vargas?
Yes, the Viva Las Vargas.
The Circus Vargas and the Warluck.
Warlun. Yeah, the races themselves, you can kind of get a little bit of like, oh, the Breitlings are kind of like your Fae race.
Yeah, they're the smallest.
They're small, they've got pointy ears, they aren't really elves.
No, they're freaky deaky. Of the five races, they're the weirdest by a mile. Like, because the Var whatever, the Varlicks or whatever they're called, are just goblins.
I mean, kind of.
They just look like goblins. They got big goblin eyes and big ears, and they're good at seeing at night. You know, they're pretty straightforward. Loramek are...
the weirdest ones.
No, I'm going with Breitling on this one.
No way. The Loramek are like bottom half fawn, top half blue man group.
I'm not saying that's not weird, but let me go through what a Breitling is real quick. They're the littlest, and they're probably the best at magic.
Yeah.
But their deal is that they are very fey. They don't have noses.
Nope.
Instead, right where their nose would be is a little drawing.
They got a couple little drawings of what look like nostrils,
mm-hmm.
and then they breathe out of their necks.
And then they've got, like, these spots that start just underneath their eyes. The first time I saw one, I thought they had, like, walrus tusks that came out of their faces. Because, you know, the drawings in this are not the best.
No.
But they have these two lines that go down below the other eyes, like they're crying pool rivers of blood, that go halfway down their necks. And those are membranes that are semi-permeable, and they breathe through them.
Yeah.
So every one of them is born with a drawing of a nose where a nose should be, although it's really just like a rune. It just always ends up happening to look like a nose. And then also two weird semi-permeable goop membranes for breathing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Breitling and Loramek are the two very much weirdest.
Yeah.
Because the Grack are just dwarves with horns.
But the stupidest horns. They remind me of the random devils from Petey Wheatstraw.
Oh, they just got tiny little baby horns.
They look like they got nipples coming out of their eyebrows.
Honestly, the first time you see one in the book, the very first drawing of a Grack.
It's the very first drawing in the book.
Yeah, and I was like, what the fuck is going on with your forehead?
There's this strong, mad, proportioned woman who's just a pure rectangle.
And she's got something coming out of her forehead, and I was not sure what it was.
No, they're nipples.
It turns out it's horns.
It looks like she's got nipples on her head.
But I say dwarves just because they're the short, square dudes.
Short, stout, square, good at warfare, lots of constitution. Loramek, I believe, are fast and agile because they're fawn legs.
Yeah, and then the top half of them are completely hairless,
mm-hmm.
and, like, just very... If the Breitlings didn't exist, I'd say close to being featureless, but the Breitlings do exist.
Yes.
So they at least do have a, you know, sort of a nose.
Uh-huh.
Vulcan being...
Vulcan, okay.
Yeah.
Vulcan are the ones... They're just goblins. They're yellow goblins. In the interest of brevity.
And the Worlum is, what if Robert Zadar had stony skin?
Yes. They're like basically the, what do you call them, the Goliaths from D&D?
Kind of.
They have that stone pebble skin, but yeah, every one of them has this like inflated frog and heat cheek pouch thing going.
I mean, it's just a giant jaw,
yeah.
And it looks like someone was drawing a regular person and then went, oh, fuck, that's right, and then went back and put a bigger jaw on them because it is not proportional to anything.
No, it never looks right. They kind of have this Robert Zadar playing a Moai statue vibe.
And in addition to having stony skin, it's a bunch of little, like, knobs all over them. They got little, like, knots that are just weird looking. Like, they just look warty.
Yeah, a Worlum staff just has knobs all over it.
That's right.
She consult
for
a doctor.
Her pleasure. Consult a doctor for her pleasure.
Each one of them gets a couple of minor bonuses and penalties to some of the six stats.
Yeah. And then an innate ability that ranges from very useful to who gives a shit.
Yeah, I think Grack is the one that's like, you don't need to eat food quite as often.
Oh, yeah. You've got one where it's like, you kind of have dark vision.
Mm-hmm.
And then someone else is like, I heal twice as fast.
Yeah. And then, let's see. Okay, Gracks don't need to eat as often. Valken can see in the dark. Worlum can carry more shit than everybody else.
Worlum have tough skin.
Oh, sorry, tough skin. They take less damage.
Yep.
Breitlings can sense anyone using any kind of magic anywhere within a mile of them instantly.
And have shitloads more magic points to start.
Yes, and Loramex are fast, I think.
Their whole thing is they're just quick.
They're just quick because they got goat legs. I do like that they say that they have backwards legs. Which
they got backwards.
Every
legs.
Once in a while, this book will have some, like, you know, high school level understanding of a basic topic, and it's kind of whoopsie doodles where they're like, these guys got backwards legs compared to people. And I'm like, no, they have digitigrade legs. Those aren't backwards, they're just different. They're not back. If you even know what the legs work, they're not backwards, because that thing that you think is the knee is just the ankle. But hey, do what you can, I guess. And then the other one is my favorite, because each one of the race descriptions gets two pages. One page has a picture, a description, the bonuses and penalties, all of that. The other one gets a list of words in their language and then a drawings of their alphabet.
Yeah. So it's, what does their alphabet look like when mm-hmm. written out? And then what does it sound like? Here are some words and what they translate to.
Yes. And it's interesting to me that, number one, all five of the races have a 26-letter alphabet with different letters that just happen to correspond to the Roman alphabet A through Z.
Yep. All of them have an A through Z equivalency.
Which is, you know, this kind of thing where a few years down the road when they were making, like, second edition of this, they'd probably be like, oh, right, most alphabets aren't the Roman alphabet with different pictures.
Yeah.
And then, additionally, my favorite thing in the Breitling is, if you wanted to know what their language sounds like, it sounds like all the Oriental languages. Mm. I was like, man, most Oriental languages don't sound like other Oriental languages. That's straight up some, I'm going to go ahead and say low-grade background, cosmic background racism.
Yeah. Because they were like, ah, yes, they have words like Kairu and Terokan.
Yeah. Well, they also have the word that is the primary thing that everyone plays as in this game. Shinkai.
Yes. You are all Shinkai.
Yeah. Everyone who's playing in this game is a Shinkai, which is, in case you're curious, I'm going to go ahead and guess probably not known to the author, Japanese for deep sea.
Nope.
Just deep sea, because it doesn't have anything to do with that.
No. It's just, you're a warrior of the light.
Yes, it means it's the Breitling word for warrior of the light, countered by the evil version of the Shinkai, the Valkyn word for shadow creatures, Korgathul. And yeah, there's this history. All these five races lived together in harmony and were perfectly fine and dominion over the land, and they were good stewards and blah, blah, blah. And they sometimes had to kill the other animals and so on to make their foods. And then one day, the Shadowkin rose, burbling up from the ground like oily, evil shadows, and there were many wars and bad things happened. And then nature, as if it sensed the ruling races crying out because their dominion was threatened, gave them all super mystic powers over the land and sea and, I don't know, fire and water and spirit. And then they became some cool knights who went off and fought the shadow creatures, and it was great, and they won. Until the shadow creatures rose up right amongst the ranks of the good guys.
Man.
And now they fight each other.
I mean, the actual end is, and then 10 dudes got together, channeled yeah. too much, blew up all the bad guys and good guys, and then, like, several hundred years later, the Shinkai are just coming back
yeah.
because the Shadowkin are also just coming
yeah,
back.
Yeah, so you're at a reset point.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, 10 Shinkai got together and were like, we'll just use the spell to bind all the Shadowkin. And whoops, we blew ourselves up, too.
Yep. Took too much of the mystic forces in and blew up, which is, again, a very Wheel of Time thing. Ah, you drew too much from the source, my dude.
Oh, no. I'll go talk to that giant about it. Hey, I remembered something from the cover of the Wheel of Time role-playing game. There's a big giant on the cover.
Yeah, in Ogier.
Hey, I would have remembered that word given sufficient time. And by sufficient time, I mean time enough to turn around and Google it.
Time enough at last.
Ah, there's like three mentions of mutton in the first paragraph about these things. Boo!
Boo, I say.
I boo Robert Jordan. I mean, I don't, because, you know,
he's very dead.
Not only is he dead, but he did create an incredible body of work that I just personally don't like. I do recognize the value of it.
That's okay. I've read all of it, and I'm like, you can boo Robert Jordan. It's fine.
Well, I'm going to get my dad on the horn real quick to boo him as my father.
Now, making a character in Mystic Forces is sad, I'd say, is probably the biggest descriptor I can use.
Yes, it is. It's got a real bad case of earn your fun.
Yeah. The weird thing is they've put so many systems into this game. When you make a character, one of the first things you choose outside of just being like, all right, which of the ruling races are you, is do you want to be a dragon knight?
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
or an enchanter. And a Dragon Knight is a Shinkai that can turn into a dragon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they can turn into dragons a set number of times per day, and they can upgrade their dragony bits to become more dragony.
And each of the different ruling races turns into a different type of dragon, so mm-hmm. they have different like stats for how much damage their bite does and
yeah,
stuff.
They're surprisingly similar, all things considered. They pretty much turn into the same dragon with, like, oh, Brightlings have a stinger on their tail, so it does extra damage, but they're small, so their bite doesn't do as much.
And whereas the Warlimer have giant, stupid jaws, so they do a ton of damage with their bite.
Yeah, but they're slower and they don't have as much of a tail attack. Then it's just that kind of thing. Yeah. So they all kind of balance out in the wash, but at least it's neat that they all look different.
Yeah, and the other one, the Enchanter, is, oh, you can use your powers to actually enchant things.
Mm-hmm.
Only enchanters can make items that are actual magic items.
Yeah.
So you... I mean, the book says technically there are a bunch of Shinkai that are neither, and you could decide to do that, mm-hmm. but there is no reason to.
Yeah, if you don't do either, then the thing you're left with that all the Shinkai eventually get access to is the mastery of the five mystic forces, which allows you to cast basically spells.
Yeah.
Just elemental attribute magics. And when they have spells that don't make sense as elemental attributes, like, say, for example, web, they just go, it's like an ice web to make it work.
A lot of it is, I keep going back to fucking Wheel of Time, but
please,
it's, you know, oh, I want to make a type of spell that does something. And unless you're talking about, I straight up hit a dude with fire, or I, you know, make wind, unless you're just doing something very basic, you usually have to blend several of the mystic forces together.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you wanted it to rain, you'd be like, oh, I can use water and air, so that way I can make it rain.
Yeah.
Great. Or I can, you know, just have fat stacks, and then I can make it rain.
Yeah. Especially if, like, the pussy be popping, then, yeah.
Make it rain. But the the way it works is you have to have, like, certain levels in certain things. So it'll be like, oh, if you want to cast just, like, a fireball at someone and it's just a fire spell, they're like, oh, you need to have at least, like, 50 in fire.
Yes.
But there might be ones where it's like, oh, you want to, like, make someone's blood boil or whatever. Then you're like, that's fire and spirit because you're doing something to a living person.
Mm-hmm.
And you might have to have, like, 60 in spirit and 30 in fire and so on like that.
Yes. Now, to become a master in any given mystic force, you need to have a rank of at least 100 in the mystic knowledge regarding that force.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you something real quick.
Well, let's start with a couple of questions. To gain mastery in a mystic force, you need to spend experience to be allowed to do that. It's called light points. And then you spend meditation rolls to see how many light points you're able to gain. You can get as much as a D20 is the usual average you would get for if you successfully meditate. You gain a D20 light points every time you spend one of these hard-bought XPs. Now, please ask me your question.
Hey, how much do I start with in any of these? Given that I am a Shinkai, a user of the mystic forces, what kind of experience level? I mean, if I'm not a master, let's say, what am I at?
Nothing.
Zero.
Nothing. Nothing in all five.
You have a zero rating in everything, which means you can do nothing.
Mm-hmm. And which means that the first thing you can try to do is make a bunch of meditation rolls. This game does a lot of those. This power uses two stats. You have to make, like, you know, sometimes there'll be a game where it's like sailing. This combines your leadership and your knowledge skills, and they'll make you, like, average them or use the worse one or the better one or whatever it is. In this game, whenever a roll calls for you to use two different attributes, you have to succeed on a roll against both. So you have to do, like, to meditate, you have to succeed at both an intelligence and then a sixth sense attribute roll. And then you can successfully meditate over, like, 3 hours and gain a D20 points in one of the mystic forces.
Hooray.
You start with nothing, and you don't get to make those meditate rolls unless you have light points to spend, which are XP, and you get a couple light points per session.
Yeah.
They do not come rolling in.
No. You're going to get maybe, like, ooh, I got 4. I'm fucking swimming in shit. This is great.
So your character starts basically able to do nothing.
Yeah. If you pick Enchanter instead of, say, Dragon Knight, because a Dragon Knight can turn into a dragon immediately.
Yes.
You get your cool dragon attacks, you get bonuses to all your physical stats,
mm-hmm.
and that's a thing you can do immediately. If you choose Enchanter, you can do Nothing.
Nothing. There are three kinds of nothing you can do. You can't do Mystic Force basic spell attacks. Oh, four. Four kinds of nothing you can't do. You can't separate your body from your soul and send your soul out to engage in soul combat with other people's souls.
Yep.
That's one of the four. You can't enchant items with powerful upgrades to increase their damage or make it so they return if thrown, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And you can't draw the ancient mystic runes of power.
Nope. None of those.
You have access to all of them, but you can't do any of it. And you won't be able to for several sessions.
Yeah.
And even when you finally unlock them, because you literally cannot access a Mystic Force with a Mystic Force rating of less than 25.
Yep.
Once you get a 25 in fire, you're like, ah, finally, I can try to cast the couple fire spells whose requirement is less than 25.
Which is not a lot.
Not a lot. Then you still have to make a roll on a table called the amateur casting table.
Yeah, you have a novice failure chance, mm-hmm. which is a percentage chance of 20%. But if you roll a 1 through 20, you look at the 1 through 20 chart, and one of those things happens to you.
Yes.
Anywhere from, like, oh, you spend all of the points you would, like, your magic points to do it, and nothing happens.
Well, yeah. If you get the novice failure chance roll, you roll a d20, and none of the things on the d20 are the spell happens.
No. Well, it's a percentage thing.
No, I know. There's a 20% chance of failing a spell at all.
But you just look at... Because it's if you roll a 1 through 20, so you just look at your 1 through 20 instead of rolling a d20.
No, no, no. I mean, you're not wrong. But they're two separate rolls. Because you're when you look at the d20 roll, there's a section in towards the middle, I think it's like 13 through 18, where it just says no effect. And on my first read-through, I was like, oh, no effect. That's when the spell works. I mean, yeah, it's like 25% of the time. That feels a little weak. But what it actually means is that when you get no effect, it's the spell doesn't happen and nothing bad happens to you.
Yes.
The other ones are the spell doesn't happen and something bad happens
to
you.
Yeah, it's like, oh, you get force feedback or whatever and take damage.
Spend all your mystic force points on it, that kind of thing. But there's no way that once you get this novice fail chance, if you get that 20% chance of your spell not working, your spell doesn't work. There's not one where it works worse or something.
No, it's just... did you roll a 1 through 20? Great. You fucking suck now.
Yeah. So that's sad. So how do you get over that? How do you get to the point where you no longer have to roll, have a 20% chance of your spell doing nothing every time you try to cast a spell? Well, you need 100 points in every single discipline that is involved in the casting of that spell.
Yeah. So, you know, even when you get to, all right, finally, I've got 100 in fire. I fucking cast a fireball without a 20% chance that I just screw myself over. Great. Of course, now if I want to cast any of the spells that are fire and
mm-hmm.
I am still fucked.
Yeah. there's skills in this game.
But not in the standard way you would think of skills.
No, they're very interesting. Number one, you don't start with any at all. There's no way to start with any.
No.
Number two, they
because,
don't...
Because, well, I mean, I'll just say the big thing in this is just stat tests.
Yes.
You don't really, like, roll against a skill. Everything is... Oh, roll against your personality mm-hmm. or your, like, fuck. I keep wanting to do stats that aren't in this. Your strength, your agility,
whatever. Strength, agility. There's six of them. They are agility, strength, willpower, endurance, intelligence, and sixth sense.
Yep.
Okay, so there you go. There's the six stats. They have an interesting mechanic by how you measure them. To generate your six stats, you start with 30, you roll 5d12, you combine those two numbers, and then you assign as desired among the stats.
Of those 5d12 you roll, you can take the bottom two results and re-roll them if you want, but mm-hmm. you have to take whatever you re-roll.
Yep. That means that you have a very swingy set of stats, because it's anywhere between 35 and 90 points.
Yep.
That's kind of a range, but yeah, on average, you'll probably have about what 60 and a half or 60 to 65 points. You spread those as desired among your stats. You may think that would give you, you know, on average about a 5 to a 7 in each of your stats. It doesn't, because then what you do is you go and compare.
Well, that would give you a 10 usually.
Sorry. You're right. Sorry. A 10 in all of your stats, but you don't have a 10. You have probably, if you have a 10 in all your stats, you have a 3 in all your stats, because you go to another table that's like, if you have between 10 and 15, you are rank 3, and everything does a d6, and then a range that shows you what a d6's range is. It's anywhere between 1 and 6, John.
Yeah, the game has a weird thing where it breaks everything down into levels
mm-hmm.
instead of straight up numbers. So yes. You're like, every 5 for a stat is another level, which is a weird decision to make, but it also has the same sort of thing for like, get the, like, combine these two stats and then take that number and then look at a different chart to see how fast you go or how much you can lift.
It's one of those systems, and, you know, there's a lot of systems like this. Like, D&D is one of those systems where you'd think you could boil the numbers down to just their bonuses. Where you'd be like, well, I have an 18 strength. I know that means plus 4. So I can probably just put plus 4 in my sheet and call it a day, right? I'm done. No, I still need to keep the 18 for, like, feet prerequisites and calculating certain stats.
And if I get a plus 1, I'm at 19, and technically that doesn't give me anything, but I do need to know in case I get an additional plus 1 past that.
Yeah, exactly. So it's one of those where you have to keep track of the actual rolled result and also the rank level. Normally, just the rank level will matter, but sometimes you're like, well, to calculate your hit points or life force, you have to add together all the values of agility, strength, and endurance, and then divide by 4 and round up, and then subtract the value of the divided number from the original number, and then that's your injury value.
Yeah, no, the numbers that you get in this are just so weird. And especially because the book has this thing where I don't know why, but it assumes all of the players in its example are way better than the starting players.
Oh, yeah.
Because it'll have an example of something that's like, oh, you're trying to, I don't know, attack someone in a combat example. You literally cannot put more than 15 into any stat to start with.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you are putting a 15 and your race has one of the bonuses to them of like a plus 2, like, great, I can start at a level 4. Most of the examples of things are like, well, he has a level 8 in this and a level 7 in this.
And a magic sword that increases that level from 7 to 10.
And you're like, no, I don't have any of this. The example you're giving me as well also ends up being like, and then of course it would be difficult and he fails. And I'm like, then what the fuck do I do? I've got a level 3 and nothing.
Yeah, this is a classic example of one of those games that starts you as an absolute dirt farmer. Like,
and
yeah,
it
you
doesn't seem like it wants to, because when it's talking about it, it's like, you're one of the chosen Shinkai that can master the mystic forces. You can turn into a dragon. You can enchant magical artifacts. You're fucking amazing. Also, you're kind of terrible, by the way.
Good one of you can do all these things. You can't.
Yeah, if you went out
you're
and
just
tried
a little
to fight,
guy.
Like, a monster, some monster would come up to you and be like, Rod, and you'd be like, whoa, hey, come on, I'm just a little guy.
Hey,
this is my birthday.
I'm a birthday boy. Come on. Yeah.
I'm a little birthday boy.
Yeah. So it's got a real strong problem with, we've seen this a lot in older games. It's very clear that they designed them so that you can play them from the ground up as like an absolute chumpling who has to earn their fun for forever. But that's not fun to write about. And that doesn't make for a fun story in your game. So instead, when you're writing the examples, you're just like, I don't know, everyone's the rough equivalent of being level 10. Everyone's a big damn hero and they have cool badass adventures. And you're like, well, if that's the only thing that even you, the author of the book, is interested in the slightest, then maybe cut out the shit under it.
There's even a point in character creation where, you know, it has all the things like write down your stats, write down the like your life points and your injury rating and so on and so on. One of them is your physical and mystical defense value, which only exists at a level 6 or higher.
Yeah.
Which is basically double what you would start with.
You cannot possibly have a level 6. So there's this part where it's like, during character creation, you're going to go through, and for your physical and mental defense rating, just add yourself a plus 1 for each rank from 6 and above. And then it doesn't mention, like, oh, by the way, you will absolutely not have anything here.
It just moves
on to the next paragraph. And it happens a couple times, because prowess rating, which is like a generic bonus you get to add to, I think, melee attacks and stuff like that, or just attacks in general, is, you know, add together two of your stats and compare it against this chart. And when the charts, for whatever reason, is hidden at the very fucking back of the book. But when you get back there, no matter what those two relevant stats are, I think they're strength and agility, no matter how high you have managed to crawl them to by just putting 15s in both and maybe playing a Warlum or something that gets a bonus there, you are an amateur.
Yeah. There's only piece of shit.
Yeah, because the range for amateur is between like 1 and 35 or something. You cannot get there.
It's just sad that the author should have known this, given how every example, every time it talks about a character, it's like, yeah, you've got all these cool things you can do, and it doesn't let you play with any of the toys to start.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not even like a, oh, because we want you to have an opening session where you're like, ah, oh, you must first learn things. You're like, yeah, no, it's going to take like 6 sessions before I'm even close to being a novice
mm-hmm.
in something.
Yeah, you notice how MMOs have stopped being like EverQuest, where you like you start as a level 1 chumpster and you have to go punch rabbits for 20 levels? Yeah, I'm going to go punch rabbits until I can finally venture out of the starting zone, because that doesn't fucking hook your audience.
Because that shit sucks ass.
The audience wants to feel like a badass right the fuck away.
And when your entire leveling experience is, I kicked a scorpion until I got 5 levels, then I kicked a slightly larger red scorpion, you're like, oh, wow. I'm great.
Oh, look at this, guys. I managed to get to level 7. I can kill a scorpion that is named Scorpok. Ooh, he might drop a belt.
He doesn't. Yeah, it's so sad, and especially because the systems are so interesting. The way skills work in this is, instead of it being like, oh, you get, you know, +1 to your roll for every skill level, different skills have a different number of skill levels, anywhere from like 2 to 12.
Yeah, if you have something like arm wrestling is a skill in this game, for example, and there's only like 1 rank in it, because what the fuck extra you need to know about arm wrestling? But one like
Alchemy has like 12.
Alchemy has 6, I think, is the total.
Oh, you're right.
Alchemy's the one with 10. I think the next highest was the one with 6.
Yeah, and all of them are either sort of a gatekeeper thing for like, oh, can you pilot a ship? If you have rank 1... in the skill of being a boat captain, you're like, oh, you can do small boats.
Yeah.
And if you wanted to do, like, I want to be the captain of a large ship, well, you're going to need the max, which is rank 3 in that.
Yeah.
And it's so interesting to say some of them are, like, oh, you got to rank 2 in, you know, tracking, and now you actually do just get a +2 to your tracking skill, but you also get the ability to now, like, track in weird environments and do other stuff.
Yeah.
So instead of it just being a numerical value, a lot of it is unlocking things you can do.
Yes. This creates a couple of interesting things. First of all, like I mentioned way earlier, there's no XP value associated with this. If you want to learn a skill, there's a roll you have to make. You have to make a series of successful stat rolls, and there's an amount of time you have to spend. So for example, if you want to learn like level 2 sculpture, you need to spend a minimum of 3 hours in at least 1-hour chunks working on sculpting and making at least 1 or 2 sculptures out of wood. Then you are a rank 2 sculptor if you succeed at making the couple of test rolls to see if you get there or not.
Yeah, great. And now that you're rank 2, you can have a sculptor's kit in order to train for the rank, and you can carve stone.
Yeah.
Now that you're a rank 2. Because normally you could carve wood at rank 1. Rank 2, you can carve stone, because everyone knows if you are a marble sculptor, you started by whittling.
Yes. There are some things where they don't take into account that disciplines don't always work that way, where it's not like, how do you learn to be the captain of a ship? Well, first, you need to learn how to be the captain of a rowboat.
Yeah. You're like, wait, what?
Rowboat captaincy is not an especially important position.
Also, if I'm at rank 2 and it's like, yeah, you can do medium-sized ships, and I go to a larger ship, am I just like, what is this shit? How do big boat work?
A faux castle and an aft castle? I can't do this.
Fucking I'm out.
I'm folding under this pressure, guys. I mean, but certain other ones just unlock bonuses. Like, there's literally a skill that's just fight good, and if you take it, then you get bonuses to fighting.
Yeah.
But the thing is, the only thing stopping you from having these skills is being able to find a trainer, because they just all have a requisite of, like, someone who's higher rank than you needs to teach you how to do this, and have the time it takes.
Yeah, and, you know, there's a difficulty to it, so there is a chance you'll be like, oh, I want to learn how to climb and get rank 1. All right. Only training time is 1 hour.
Yeah.
It's difficulty 7. So if you fuck up on your roll, then, you know, you don't learn anything from that hour of climbing.
It's unlikely you will, because in order to beat difficulty, the way this game's basic mechanic. This is probably an important thing to mention.
No, probably.
Yeah, you add the rank value of the relevant stat. So, for example, climbing is agility. So you take your climbing, a starting character, almost definitely agility 3.
Almost certainly.
And then you roll a d12 and see if the combined value of those two things, plus any other bonuses you might have, you won't, beats a 7.
Yeah, that's so, all. You know, if you get a 4 up on a d12 and you spend an hour, great, you learned how to climb.
Yeah.
Fabulous.
And that's, I like the idea that there's no like gatekeeping mechanic to that. You could just, if you can make the roll, you can learn the skill if you have the time. I mean, the problem, of course, as we've consistently harped on throughout this review, is that you start as like one of the preeminent warriors of this era, and you don't know anything.
Oh yeah, and
you don't have any skills.
The problem with the skills, even though it's interesting to make skills not be just numerical bonuses for the most part. What it means is,
I know,
it's a gatekeep.
Yeah,
I can't be, oh, I have a background where I grew up, you know, near a lake and I know how to use a boat. No, you don't. Fuck you. I don't care what your background is. You have no idea what a boat looks like.
Yeah, it creates negative space. We've talked about this a lot, especially more commonly you see this in source books when they add new skills that break up what the old skills used to do.
Yeah.
Where you'll see a book, the core book gives you like computer use as a skill. And there's a section under computer use for how to use it for hacking. And then a source book comes out and it adds a hacking skill. And all of a sudden your character doesn't know how to fucking hack anymore because there's a new book.
Yeah.
A lot of the time when games add a mechanic for something, it creates a thing where something you thought everyone in the world should at least have a chance to do, now they just don't.
Oh, yeah. You know, as soon as it comes out and they're like, oh, as long as you have this feat, you can swing from a chandelier. And now you're like, oh, fuck, you mean I never could have before and can't until I get this?
Yeah.
Weird.
It feels weird. Like, anyone could presumably jump up and try to grab a chandelier. Yeah, you might do an ass job, but what if you're just especially dexterous? You could probably pull it off. You see that a lot here. I mean, arm wrestling is a skill. That means that unless you spend the time and learn it, you just do not know what arm wrestling is.
It's very weird.
People can explain it to you, but until you pass a series of strength checks, you do not know.
There is also another version of the test for things which doesn't take your stat into account.
Right.
And is just a d12, mm-hmm. But it only comes up like a couple times.
Well, what's weird about this, I mean, I won't even say it's weird, this is just a sign of the times of an amateur role-playing game design, is they come up with this fairly straightforward mechanic for how to determine success on things.
Yeah, d12 plus your level.
D12 plus your level against a target difficulty. But then every chapter opens with 12 pages of new rolls you use for everything in that chapter. So it is impossible to get a mental grasp on things where you're like, well, how do I calculate my number of mystical attunement point specialty track abilities and the number I can use per turn? Oh, well, that's easy. You just have to roll the following weird new roll I just made up just now.
I just decided, fuck it, this sounds good.
Here on page 131, I added a brand new rule and roll you need for it. Why didn't you use the really simple one that you introduced?
You already have one.
The one you introduced at the start of the book that makes perfect sense and is fairly intuitive.
No way, I want to go out for more rules. I know we have rules at home, but I don't like them.
One small black rule, please.
Yeah, the fact that this book just feels like someone was grasping at something and just missed all of it. Because like, oh, I want to have cool new races, and it's like they got really close and just didn't quite get there.
None of them are. I didn't come away from this thinking any of the five races are like cool. They're just weird.
It's all of them. I'm like, oh, I want to make a new cool skill system. You were so close, and no.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I want to make the way that you make stats interesting. Yeah, you didn't, though.
I want it so that literally half the people who are playing this game from the jump can turn into a dragon form and breathe breath weapons and use their claws and bites and stuff to attack people all the time. That's really neat. Is it super powerful? No. It increases the stats by small numbers.
You're basically going to go up two in any given
two
level.
Two ranks, because it adds 10 to the base value of all of your physical, or of every attribute but sixth sense, which
and
decreases.
Intelligence.
Oh, and intelligence. I think
intelligence stays the same, and sixth sense goes down.
Decreases by 5, but all of the physical stats go up by 10.
Yeah.
Which means, generally speaking, two ranks.
Yeah.
But it's just not that impressive. Also, if you get hurt in the dragon form, it comes with you back into your non-human, your ruling race form. It's it's like it's a neat idea, but it doesn't work in execution. Plus, if you plan to play a short game, you better believe everyone's going to play Dragon Knight, because at least they get something.
Even if someone tells you, guys, we're in this for the long haul, we're going to play a ton of this, why would you start as an enchanter? Because there's always the risk that, no, you aren't. And given this game, no, you aren't.
Also, who wants to play as an enchanter? I mean, yeah, I guess you could make yourself a lot of cool weapons, but if you're the enchanter, you're the party enchanter.
Yeah. And sure, you might go like, ooh, but I could make some cool runes and be like, I'm going to use rune magic that no one can. You're like, yeah, but all you're doing is inscribing runes on my sword so that it's cool.
Yeah, or on my dragon hide so that I can dragon better.
Yeah, you're just going to write the rune for fire on my sword so my sword's on fire, fucking enchanter.
Get good. Learn to spell twist. Yeah, it's oh, one more thing you get to select.
Oh, just one more thing.
Yeah, there's one more thing you get to select during character creation that I found particularly hilarious, which is your specialty.
Oh, yes.
This game has 7 specialties. They are very interesting. They are, I'll see if I can remember them even off the top of my head here. Edged melee weapons, blunt melee weapons, archery.
I'm sorry, it's non-edged melee.
I'm sorry, it's called the blunt lord, I think it was, or the smash lord, because each one of them has a title that you get if you take it. And so there's
wow, I was known as the smash lord in high school.
Weirdly, I was known as the edge lord.
And there we are.
I mean, it was actually Blade Lord. It's a real bummer there, but yeah. There's, so
I had watched Blade a lot and would not shut up about it.
They kept calling me a total Blade Lord, and I'd be like, "Hey, don't call me that." And halfway through saying it, they'd be like, "Dun dun 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 dun." I'd be like, "Oh, that song again." It's that really long Blue Order remix, or Blue Monday, or New Order remix,
New Monday,
New Blunders.
I hate New Mondays.
I'm Garfield and I hate New Mondays, but I love the new flesh lasagna. Okay, so sorry. Blades, non-blades, ranged, but archery. I'm sorry, ranged, archery.
Mm-hmm.
So that's big 4. They're unarmed. So you got 5 attack types, right?
Yeah.
And then what are the last 2? Nature, which is just like ranger tracking and stuff like that. And then the wildest one by a country mile, defending.
Which, when I first saw that, I was like, oh, sweet. When I make my character, I'm going to make him a defending character, because then I can be like
a tank,
good at defense. Yeah, that's great. I can get a sword and board. Go do that. Defending is rogue skills.
It's thief stuff. It's things like hiding in shadows and moving silently.
And the specialty, when you get it, does nothing, because all of the specialties have like 10 ranks of abilities that you can get.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be like, all right, what's the first rank in defending? Pick locks.
Yeah.
So before you can get anything, you got to learn how to pick locks. Okay, cool. Why? Meh. Anyway, I mean, once you get to like the 5th ability, then it gives you a bonus to defense. What the fuck is this?
Why is it called defending? It's such a weird offshoot thing to see, like, because, I mean, even by the standards of 2000, when tank wasn't really a word that everyone said constantly,
it was already starting.
The concept had already really seeped into video games.
Yeah.
Defending still implies defending.
Yeah.
Like it.
And the picture for it is a shield.
Yes.
You but, motherfucker.
But then all the abilities are pick locks, move silently, hide in shadows, backstab.
Now, these are all specialties you can get. And honestly, even some of the like weapon things you can do still come with nonsense garbage that doesn't make a lot of sense.
Well, some of them are just hilarious on the face of them. Like, there's an ability called quick attack, which is making 2 attacks, and there's an ability called 2 attacks where it starts by saying, this may seem like it's making 2 attacks, but it's making 1 big attack. You're like, why don't you reverse the names of those?
This is weird.
I guess 2000 was before the invention of the word processor. One could not backspace into Mordor.
And you only get to pick 1, and you never get to change it. So if you're like, all right, I'm a cool edged weapon master, I'm the blade master, it's me, I've got quick hand and swift strike, and I've started going down this thing, if you ever want to have survival training or the ability to track, you cannot ever because you didn't pick nature.
Yes.
And same thing, you can't ever pick a lock because lock picking isn't a skill where you can learn it.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have chosen defending and then spent light points on getting this talent.
Now, let me ask you a quick question here, John, because I feel like we ought to take turns asking each other questions.
Of course.
When you choose your specialty, which you are forced to do during character creation, which ranks of your specialty do you acquire during character creation?
Why? None of them, my boy!
Tis it nothing day already?
Yeah.
The spirits did it in no nights!
So annoying. Every time it's like, you're going to be a cool wizard. You can't cast spells. You got to pick a specialty to how you fight. You don't do it.
I like that it forces you to still pick one, even though you get nothing. Like, there's, you might as well, if you're going to give the player nothing, you might as well at least let them pick when they choose the first one.
Yeah. Just
to be like, hey, see how you feel when you're playing.
Yeah. Let me spend points on something and then lock me into it instead of just being like, yo, it's going to be like 12 sessions because obviously the first thing you're going to do is spend your points on being an actual wizard. And then maybe you'll be like, all right, I'll spend some light points on this. Oh, I can pick locks, you say.
It's just silly. It's such a, it's like a literal Monty Hall thing where you're just choosing what's behind door number two.
And they also have another set outside of those that are just universal talents. Mm-hmm. So in addition to being able to be like, oh, I could pick locks, you can take stuff like, I have fucking crisis control, which lets you do a desperate deed, which is essentially you get a bonus, but you can spend a light point to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, you can do that once without spending a light point. Great.
Yeah. Now, I don't want to sleep on a few other things that are present here in the game. The combat system is one of those combat systems that does everything in phases and has, like, action declaration and defense setting and so on. You know, kind of an older combat system.
Yeah.
It describes itself as being quick-paced and brutal, and then it gives you an example that is one round of combat that takes 6 pages of the book. And it's like, it's Joe's phase one, which makes it the Bristlewolf's phase four. During Joe's phase one, he declares that he'll do an action. We'll pick up that again in phase three. Now, during phase two,
there's also, the writer was like, well, what happens if someone has the initiative and they want to do a melee attack, but they're not next to you, and the person they are running to has a ranged attack, but they have a lower initiative? Normal games are just like, well, on your turn, you move and then attack that guy.
Yeah, but moving is like phase six.
Well, in this one, it's if you try to attack someone in melee, but you're not already next to them, then you have to move. So moving means you don't get to attack immediately. The person you're attacking can attack you because they have a ranged attack. However, if they were melee attacking, then they would wait until you get... I'm like, just fucking who cares? I don't... Why is this so complicated? Mm-hmm. Why are there so many phases?
Another thing that's fun to me is that you can choose to add your strength value to damage. It keeps telling you to pick an amount of your strength to add to damage, but it's not like you have to measure that. It's not like you run out of strength after a while. So I guess it's just if you don't want to kill the thing you're swinging at, you can choose to reduce the amount of strength damage you inflict.
Yeah, because given that the book is full of examples of someone being like, well, they've got a level 10 strength, and I'm like, that's weird, because that means they got like 40 more points of stat than I do.
Yes.
But discounting that, that's also kind of like, all right, I guess if you get to that point and you're like, I don't know, I hit some random guy, like, I guess you might not want to just explode his face off, so sure.
Yeah, so every point of strength that you get through with damage does 2 damage. And then you also add that to the...
Of course, this is level damage, not number strength damage.
And then you add the rank value damage of your weapon, the damage value of your prowess ranking, an additional just 12 points that's just there. That's just part of the damage calculation.
Part of it.
The yield damage from your weapon itself, plus any bonuses it might have. And then you compare all of those numbers against their defense rating, and anything that gets through is damage that they take, and anything that don't doesn't get through is damage that their armor or their shield takes, because everything's got trackable damage in this game.
Well, yeah, because you're like, here's a giant amount of numbers, and then I got to compare it to your giant amount of numbers, and if anything gets through and it gets through the armor, then you'll take some damage. But you also have an injury rating, which if you take enough damage, then in addition to just taking hit points, you also get an injury.
Now, you may be wondering, where's that injury? Well, don't worry. There's hit location.
Don't you fret about that, baby boy.
It's
going to
definitely get you a hit location chart.
If you want to know what the armor value for every single part of your body is, it's there.
Yeah. Now, you also, when you're rolling to an attack, you always roll a d12, just like for every other skill in the game. But here, the d12 is called the proficiency die, and if you roll a 1 on it, your attack is automatically considered a feeble attack. And in that case, you don't get the 1. Instead, you roll an additional d6 and subtract that from every other part of your attack value to see if you can still hit even with a minus d6 and no value from the d12. If you roll a 12, then that is a critical hit, and you add an additional d8 of damage unless your strength is higher than rank 5, in which case you add a d10 of additional damage. Now, that may sound like it's the crit mechanic, and it is. It's half of the crit mechanic.
It's a crit mechanic.
Now, if your roll is more than twice the defense value of the attack, defender's attack, that is an additional crit, and then you roll an extra d10 plus 6 damage, and if you roll a 10 on that d10, you get to roll another d10 and add to that d10, and if you triple the damage...
then you get a Kewpie doll.
It's so fast and efficient.
This is...
the story of a girl.
Yes. This book cried a river and drowned the whole world.
Thank you and good night.
No, but it's so interesting to me to see a game like this that isn't a D&D heartbreaker, but is just a heartbreaker in that it is heartbreaking to see someone really put all of their love into this and it's bad.
I mean, I'll give it, there's some things to be credited for this book. What it is, most notably, is a book out of time. It's an anachronism as far as books go, because by 2000, there was a universal lingua franca for how game design more or less looked and worked. You knew what fucking defending meant. You started to know that maybe people don't like D12s all that goddamn much. Maybe you shouldn't base your whole game around them. You knew that Satanic Panic was at least winding down, so you didn't need to start your book with an impassioned full-page argument about how books aren't the work of the devil, you guys. Sometimes they're okay. Oh, but also, yes, sometimes some of them are the work of the devil, but not this one.
This one's cool.
And all that stuff was screaming to me all the way through. I was like, 1985, 1985.
Oh, yeah.
Bowling for Soup's 1985.
100% this book, like I said before, it feels like someone found it and published it in 2000 rather than it was written in 2000.
Came out of a fucking time capsule.
Someone buried this in the late 80s and then somebody else found it.
Bunch of dry ice smoke. Whoosh. Oh my goodness, a book in need of publishing.
What is this, some text? This got to go to the printer.
Yeah, it's the weirdest thing. Some of the story's okay. There's a lot of inventive stuff here, but ultimately none of it really adds up to much.
No, there's a lot of passion, but not a lot of substance.
Yeah. And also very heavily suffers from the problem of everything you're reading about, you're not going to get to use.
Uh-huh.
The other thing that constantly shows up all the way throughout the whole book is the concept of green steel, which is this game's magical metal. So every time they mention any kind of weapon or armor or item, they mention, oh, by the way, if it's made of green steel, add the following effects. You are never going to see that.
No. Green steel, enchanting, all of these effects.
Runes, yeah.
It's just this ephemeral maybe on the horizon that will never exist.
Yeah. The whole concept of spirit combat, you can only do it if you're a Shinkai non-dragon knight, but you can send your mind out of your body to go fight other minds that came out of bodies.
Yeah, you can go do astral projection fights.
Yeah, but that's all it does. You can't use it for anything else. You can't fight people who are in their bodies. It's literally for popping out of your body to slap fight people that are also popped out of their bodies.
Hey. Sometimes.
Yeah, you never know when you need to do that. Anyway, we've said a lot.
Yeah. So, Mystic Forces is bad.
Yeah. I mean, I can't imagine anyone's going to rush off and seek this book out immediately, so it might be kind of hard to find nowadays.
Yeah, from Positive Role Playing Inc.
Again, a sign that this is, a very small house that pretty much just made this.
Yep.
Their game that's like, hey, our game is cool and good, not like those other games that might be Satan.
Well, I mean, the top on the special thanks and acknowledgements is God.
Yes.
So, you know.
Well, that's just his Haven game operations director.
Yeah. And his wife, who is also God for his Haven game.
I think she might be the Hollyhock God for his Nobilis games. Anyway, John, what would you say is your favorite thing about, you turn the book over
Mystic
and now I can't
Forces.
Remember what it's called. Thank you, Mystic Forces. Right. Eternal Sunshine.
Just slips right out. Greased up text.
Is there a horror movie about a person who literally cannot be remembered? like that's the villain's trick?
I mean, there's Doctor Who and The Silence.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, all right. That's fair. Yeah. That's right. That's a Doctor Who villain, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. But that was like, I was like, that's a great idea for a horror villain, is a villain who, like, no matter what, you absolutely cannot remember that you had an encounter with them.
Yeah. It is a great idea.
And Doctor Who had it already. Good.
They did it.
That's fair.
So I think my favorite thing in Mystic Forces, and there are a few things that I feel are decent ideas.
Yeah.
And I think my favorite has to be the idea of skills as non-numerical things. Obviously, the execution very much falls short.
Oh, yeah.
But the idea of having it be you learn how to do something rather than doing it better, you learn a way in which to perform something.
Yeah.
And I like the idea that you're like, oh, yeah, you know, you have a basic level of competency and whatever, but when you pick a skill, it means you're trying to develop something in there.
Yeah.
So I like that.
Yeah, it's fair. Yeah. To quote Babs, you don't love this book. You love the ideas of this book. I guess to paraphrase. And also to call Barbara Streisand Babs, which I assume everyone does.
Everyone.
That's the only person I can think of who is called Babs.
I mean, I'm going to tell you right now, I immediately went to Bunny from Tiny Toons.
To quote Babs from Tiny Toons,
no,
we're
relation.
All a little loony.
But there you go. What is your favorite thing in Mystic Forces?
I'm kind of there with you where there's a few concepts I like.
Yeah.
I'm going to say it's the whole concept that the Dragon Knight just day one can turn into a fucking dragon and rampage around.
Great idea.
Yeah. That's neat. You've seen it in other games. This is kind of an early one for that concept. But the idea that your character's just like, yeah, what's your thing? Oh, I turn into a dragon and I rampage and it's rad.
Yeah.
And I get to turn into a big combat beast and just, which feels like the one thing that any cool character in this game will ever do.
Yep.
So that's going to be my favorite thing. God, you know, I was listening to you talk, but I was also realizing I don't like Doctor Who, but a lot of their villains are really good.
I don't like Doctor Who, but the show is real good.
No, it's not. Like,
oh,
a lot of their
terrible.
Villains are also really bad. Like, I'm going to go ahead and say it. Daleks are just fucking trash cans, and I've never liked them. And
But here's the thing.
Yeah.
Daleks are trash cans, and they're great. And here's the thing, Jeff. Why don't you Dalek my nuts?
I'm not even trying to get into the argument about, like, oh, no, stairs or whatever people always say about Daleks. I'm just like, they're kind of one note, you know, they're just exterminate or whatever. But Weeping Angels, that's a cool concept.
Oh, yeah. No, there's a lot of very cool ideas for things.
Yes. So, you know, maybe I'm coming around on Doctor Who in regards to every aspect of it, but voluntarily watching it.
In regards to every aspect, but watching people act.
I like lots of the actors who have played Doctor Who in other things. Jessica
Actually,
Jones.
They played the Doctor?
I'm sorry. Yes, you're right. They played the Doctor, the Time Lord of Gallifrey or whatever the fuck. I don't care. You know that.
I know you don't care. Anyway, my least favorite thing about Mystic Forces is there's no Doctor Who in them. No. The worst thing in Mystic Forces is the dangling carrot of power. Specifically, I'm going to go with the actual magic system.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that you start with no capability of engaging with an entire core system of this game and won't be able to engage with it for a while.
And even when you do, you will be treated like a knucklehead who constantly blows himself up for
one
forever.
One in five times, you'll just be like,
I've spent all my magic points.
even when you get up to like, yo, I've got 90 points in this, you'd think I'm good enough now. No, you're not at 100. Go fuck yourself.
You got to be at 100. And then lots of the spells require numbers way above that. There's at least one spell in this game that requires at least 105 in all four of the disciplines.
Yeah. And it's the most egregious thing in this book that you would put something like that and then tell the player, you are not allowed to play with this yet.
Yeah.
Fuck you.
Yeah, that's real bad. That's real bad.
And for you, the worst thing.
I more or less want to agree with, I'm probably going to go with the specialties for the same reason. Because you see them, you're like, oh, I get that. That's a neat idea. And plus the idea that they're kind of your class identity or your specialty identity, because they give you a name. Like, oh, well, if you take this one, you're a blade lord. You're the master of swords. Oh, what does that translate to? Nothing.
You literally nothing.
You get that title. Done. So that's kind of a disappointment. The concept that, you know, you can you become famous throughout the ranks of the Shinkai Knights because you're like, well, I am the master of thrown weapons. Although, granted, almost all of the thrown weapon abilities that are interesting are you spin a lot and that makes your thrown thing go faster.
Yeah.
There's three of them.
That's a good trick.
Yeah. One of them is you dive into a spinning roll and when you come up, you throw a thing. And because of the roll, you throw it faster.
Hell yeah.
One of them is you jump in the air and spin around a whole lot and throw the thing and that makes the throw faster.
Well, what about spinning and then throwing multiple things?
That's the third one,
Ding!
And it makes the throws faster. And I'm like, what anime was he watching where someone threw knives and they were doing a bunch of jumpy spins?
All of them?
There's probably a particular one. Like, you know, if you see someone introduce
actually, I think it was probably influenced by the Gleeman from Wheel of Time.
Oh, thank you, yes. Like, if you see someone do the thing where they unfold their coat and there's 300 Derringers in it, you're like, that person's been watching Trigun. Like, you know.
that person's been watching Trigun or Boondock Saints, maybe.
This guy wouldn't watch Boondock Saints. He'd park that as a tool of Satan.
No, you're a tool of Satan.
This show has a gay person in it. I shan't.
You're for tools.
You get to be like, no, Willem Dafoe's acting. I don't think he's actually gay. And also, no one's that gay.
Also, go walk into the ocean.
Just keep walking. Oh, walk into the ocean.
There you go. Hey, man.
Would you play this?
No, obviously not. It's unplayably bad.
And I'll go ahead and say it. The fact that I can't remember what the book is called if your drink is blocking the headline, the title, then that should be a strong indicator of whether or not this put any hooks into me.
And no.
No,
it didn't. Are no hooks here. There are pseudopods. No suckers. Just wet, slappy bits.
This is one of those claw games set to irritate children. Just at the bottom maximum, minimum grip level.
Oh, yeah. This goes up, and it doesn't try and grab something out of the claw game. It just gently caresses it on its way.
The claw doesn't even close. It doesn't even do that part. It just goes down and back up.
It is so... It's weird, because I'm like, I will remember this game specifically for how angry it made me, and you will not, because there's no reason to.
I'll remember being a little squicked out by the concept of ruling races, and that'll be the end of it. Oh, and also the fact that one of the species has a language that sounds like all the Oriental languages.
You know, the Oriental ones.
It sounds like Tagalog and Korean.
Both. At the same time.
It's exactly the same as both of those. And for several hundred other languages. Also, all of them use the alphabet A through Z.
Great.
But drawn in little circles.
We'll certainly do
this. So no, I wouldn't play this. I don't want to. I don't care to. It's just a thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
But hey, why not support us by listening to us make characters in it anyway over at patreon.com/systemmastery.
Yeah, if you want to know the characters that we made in this that can't do anything and suck ass, then by God, you can head on over to patreon.com/systemmastery, give us a buck, and listen to us be sad.
I hear characters that suck ass, and my head immediately starts filking out the rest of the angry video game nerd theme song, but with our stuff. And then I'm like, no, I don't want to say a bunch of things about Buffalo Diarrhea. I don't want to live that guy's tortured life.
I'm not in there.
I'm not in there. I don't want to attach myself to Pocket Protectors and Rolling Rock as a thing I have to do in order for anyone to know who I am.
God bless the whole medium of a podcast where I don't need to visually keep the same look or else everyone will get angry at me.
So anyway, patreon.com/systemmastery. Support us instead of the angry video game nerd.
Yeah,
who I assume has a Patreon. I mean, why wouldn't
he? I assume he makes an ass load of money.
He's rich as fuck,
nothing.
I'm sure. Yeah. He doesn't need the help.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? Quit supporting people that already make money. Support us.
You know that money you're about to just put in an envelope and mail to Critical Role?
You know when you were like, you know, I think one of the McElroys could use another dollar. They don't. They don't need it.
They don't even live in California where everything's expensive. I think they live in Texas and North Carolina.
Something like that.
Something like that. I don't remember. But send us their money. Get their money and send it to us.
Instead of buying a die that says Critical Role on it, buy a die that says System Mastery.
And then just write Critical Role on it in Sharpie. Your friends won't notice the difference, but we'll reap the profits.
It's so easy.
Anyway, there's a lot of levels of the Patreon where you can support us to unlock yet more cool content.
And more of us bitching.
Uh-huh. Hey, I'm having fun. I'm actually happy with our current situation.
Oh, I love everything and everyone, but especially the listeners.
Uh-huh. And especially Bart.
Especially the listeners who give us money.
No one who listens to System Mastery could be evil.
The System Mastery. The.
Also, we have books. There's books you can buy now that are by us, and more books coming out soon. A cookbook, even. Thank you so much for supporting us. I'm starting to feel the after effects of the booster shot I got earlier today. So I'm going to sign off now and then shiver my way through the bonus content. You all have a really good one.